please the court, my name is John Kingstead. I represent Douglas and Judith Mahler, who are from Bayfield County, who are landowners in Bayfield County. We're appealing this judgment of the District Court of the Western District of Wisconsin. And I think I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my 15 minutes, because I think I can state my argument pretty succinctly here, which is that without the magic words, if you will, that's what Bayfield County would call it, granting explicit, specifically, in those many words, right-of-way to the state of Wisconsin or any railroad in a grant of lands in aid of railroad construction, there can be no implied right of reverter to the United States, no application of the Abandoned Railroad Right-of-Way Act, 43 U.S.C., Sections 912. Yes, sir. Well, my clients own it, Your Honor. My clients, this is a takings case, essentially. This, my clients claim that this... I think that's where we disagree, Your Honor. This was not granted in fee. Well, excuse me, I'm sorry, it did come in fee to the United States. You're quite right. It came to the United States in absolute fee simple. And I think that's That's correct.
And the railroad's got an easement.
Yes.
But it didn't never belong to your clients or their predecessors in interest. It belonged to the United States and came to the railroad from the United States. Your client has never, from the beginning of the world to this day, had any interest in this land.
Well, I think that's not exactly correct. Under the rules of law of the state of Wisconsin, the case of Paulnow versus Department of Natural Resources established that upon abandonment of an easement or right of passage, that the land reverts to the abutting landowners. And my clients do have an interest in the abutting and underlying land. There was only an easement reserved by the predecessor in interest to my clients, which was a railroad, but the land was granted in fee simple. Excuse me, Your Honor.
In a conflict between Wisconsin law and federal law always wins. That's Justice Kennedy's law. Right? There's nothing Wisconsin can do to say in supervention of law in the United States that on the end of a railroad right interest it goes to a final landowner as opposed to the original law here in the United States. And that's my puzzle. Is there anything other than your belief that Wisconsin law trumps federal law?
Well, it's the cases that... Well, it goes back to the interpretation of the original land grant, and that's what I'm trying to get to here, Your Honor, is that we're talking here between the distinction between a land grant of a right-of-way versus the land grant of railroad or lands in aid of railroad construction.
No, whether what was granted was a right-of-way or a fee simple, so a grant was the United States, and federal law specifies that in one circumstance, I just don't see how it's possible, how it's conceivable that your client could have any legal interest, that your client is none of the three people named in the statute as possible interest holders. And those three people are the municipality, the railroad, and the United States.
Well, that's what we're getting to, though, is that the statute does not apply. It only applies where the United States has retained this implied right of reverter. The United States disposed of all of its interest when it gave the land to the state of Wisconsin in 1856 and 1864. The state of Wisconsin granted the lands to the railroad in fee simple absolute upon the completion of the railroad. The railroad then turned around and gave the land to a John Canfield in fee simple absolute, reserving to the railroad an easement or right of passage or right simply to occupy for railroad structures across my client's land and lands of other people. It just so happened to be in one of these odd numbered sections under this checkerboard land grant scheme that they took this because actually in many cases that the right-of-way that we're talking about here was not even on some of these odd-numbered sections. And they just went through other lands that perhaps were taken by eminent domain or were granted by the people who had settled the lands, like preemptive settlers or homestead settlers. The case that we are saying applies here is the case of Noble versus Oklahoma City, United States Supreme Court decision from 1937 that said that in the case of Oklahoma City was identically, it was in the same position as Bayfield County as in this case, and the Supreme Court said, no, there was no explicit grant of a right-of-way in the original land grant. There was only a grant of a franchise or a right to take a property upon payment of just compensation. Therefore, the Oklahoma City could not claim under this Section 43 U.S.C. Section 912. And by extension, then this, because the that part that grants the land in 1922 to abutting landowners, in order to bring the United States' interests into conformity with the rest of the country and into the majority rule, such as the Paulnau rule, that statute now has been repealed to the extent of trying to revest, trying to take back those implied rights of reverter that were only granted in those specific situations where an explicit express grant of a right-of-way was included in the land grant. Now, the Northern Pacific Railroad land grant was one of those. It had an explicit grant of right-of-way. Union Pacific Railroad land grant was one of those. The Illinois Central was one of those. There were a number of other ones. There was one that was mentioned, the St. Joseph's and Denver Railroad. That was another case, the case that involved the Baldwin case. That was another one that happened to have that. Those cases also happened, those land grants, I should say, also happened to have this part of this checkerboard land grant scheme. I think it's important to note that in the Supreme Court's more recent decision, the Leo Sheep Company case, I think it was a 1978 case, the court said that the court refused to imply an easement of necessity for the United States government over some of these same types of lands that were outside of the right-of-way of the Union Pacific in order for the United States to be able to access some of its public lands that were kind of interspersed between these checkerboard land grants to the public or to the railroad. Bayfield County's argument expands the scope of this 1922 Act far beyond the scope of Congress's intent or any of the Supreme Court's decisions. It amounts to nothing more than a post hoc rationalization for a naked taking of private property without just compensation. I guess I just want to comment briefly here on the position that that we were apprised that Rails to Trails Conservancy is taking a position here, which is actually contradicts the record here and actually contradicts Bayfield County's position. The Rails to Trails Conservancy says, well, there really was, in effect, all the time, general right-of-way grants or general right-of-way acts in effect during the time that this Wisconsin railroads were constructed. There's an 1852 grant, which I had never heard of, frankly, that they pulled up and presented, and they said that this one may have applied. And they also pulled out they also referred to the 1876 General Right-of-Way Act, which the United States Congress passed in 1876 in response to some of the abuses of these land grants that they had seen before. I would only say that the 1852 right-of-way grant specifically would not apply here because, well, first of all, the according to its own terms, you had to have a corporation that would take these land grants chartered within 10 years of the grant. That didn't happen here, so we can't have that apply here. And second of all, one of the requirements is that there had to be a profile map filed with the Department of, the General Land Office at that time, which is now the Department of the Interior Bureau of Land Management. A profile map had to be filed, which staked out or basically platted where the right-of-way would be going. Now, we don't have any evidence that that happened here, either for the 1852, under the 1852 Right-of-Way Act, and we don't have any evidence that this happened under the 1876 Right-of-Way Act grant. And that, by the way, in the Paulnau decision, the Wisconsin Supreme Court indicated that because of the absence of any filing or reference and any evidence that such a profile map had been filed to show the platting of this, that act simply would not apply. And so it would be the same here. Beside the fact that Bayfield County has never raised this before, I would just say that there's nothing in the record, and I think that there's simply nothing even out there. I mean, the Department of the Interior was even a party to this, and they indicated, they disclaimed it's the United States' interest in this right-of-way. And I think if they had something, they certainly would have produced it. There was nothing there, so therefore that would not apply. That 1876 grant would not apply, Right-of-Way Act. Finally, I guess I would say that even if it did apply, we have a 1942 United States Supreme Court decision in Great Northern Railway, which basically repudiated, and I would say really overturned, the earlier decision of Rio Grande Western Railway versus Stringham, which was a subsequent case to the Northern Pacific versus Townsend decision. that held that the implied right of reverter arose under the General Right-of-Way Act of 1876. Now, the Great Northern Railroad case was a mineral rights case, but the Supreme Court very clearly explained that they had been in error in the Rio Grande case in terms of defining this as a right-of-way, the type of right-of-way, which being a type of fee simple idea in the Rio Grande case. And they also referred, by the way, to the Noble case as having the same implications there. They said that really what the Department of the Interior and Congress had intended in the interpretation of the Department of the Interior clearly intended that there's only a right of passage, a non-fee simple concept, and only a right of passage over the public domain. Yes, Your Honor. We filed this under.
We know that under the Tucker Act, you have to go to the Court of Federal Claims. The district court doesn't even have jurisdiction.
The district court has jurisdiction for claims up to $10,000.
Yes.
And so we are here under that. And
less than $10,000?
I'm sorry?
You think that claims were less than $10,000?
I think that we can claim up to $10,000 in district court, and the rest would be against Bayfield County. But we also have jurisdiction. Well, I don't. I'm not prepared to make that representation here, Your Honor. I can't do that. But in any event, we have jurisdiction under 1331, which allows an action under the United States Constitution and a claim against Bayfield County, if nobody else. And we had a jurisdiction also against the United States under 1331 and 2201 and 2202, the Declaratory Judgment Act. So. The 2201 is not, I recognize, but 1331 is, and I think that's, if it's under.
1331 is a grand jurisdiction with respect to the United States, only to the extent provided elsewhere, and the Tucker Act makes it clear that takings claims are an exception.
Against the United States, they're an exception, yes, but against.
I don't see how it is conceivable under the Bayfield County Court case.
Bayfield County took this land without paying for it. This is a taking without just compensation. They simply said this land is. An illegal deed, a deed that was completely void. It had no authority. The land had already been abandoned under state of Wisconsin law and the law of property in the state of Wisconsin. That controls the disposition of property. The railroad had nothing to give away. I'm going to reserve any time that I may have for rebuttal. Thank you.
I'm Mr. Montague.
Mr. Nording is going to go first, if that's all right. May it please the court, my name is Richard Nording. I represent Bayfield County in this matter. In my view, this case fundamentally boils down to mostly to one simple question, and that is whether or not the Townsend case decided by the U.S. Supreme Court should be construed broadly as the Bayfield County urges, or whether it should be construed very narrowly as is argued by the Maulers. And I expect to address two points in my planned argument. Number one, that the rationale of the Townsend case and that the language of the Townsend case supports the county's broader interpretation. And secondly, that the public good or that public policy is better served under the Bayfield County approach to the Townsend case. Now, the Maulers argue for a very narrow construction of Mauler, that is to say, unless a grant of lands from the United States contains the specific words grant of a right-of-way, then there cannot be any possible right-of-reverter in the United States. And that such a grant has to include the words right-of-way in so many words. Bayfield County takes a somewhat broader view of the Townsend case and argues that there is an implied right of reverter to the United States whenever there has been a grant of public lands for use as a railroad right-of-way, and where the grant indicates Congress's intent that the grant was for the specific purpose of creating a public highway in the form of a railroad, and that also indicates that the recipient railroad is not free to alienate the railroad corridor without limitation. If the court would indulge me for just a moment, I would like to refer to what I believe to be the very heart of the Townsend case, which is at page 271 of that opinion, and compare the analysis that was done in Townsend, the analysis of the grant involved in Townsend, with the grant that is involved in our case, and we'll see that the parallels here are very striking. First question is, what is the nature of what was granted? And the Townsend case described the nature of what was granted there as the land forming the right-of-way. Their specific statement was, manifestly, the land forming the right-of-way was not granted with the intent that it might be absolutely disposed of at the volition of the company. That's precisely the situation that we have here. Lands were granted that formed the right-of-way at issue. So the parallel is completely accurate. Second, in the very next sentence, the Townsend case discusses the purpose of the grant and states, the grant was explicitly stated to be for a designated purpose, which is described above as the establishment of a railroad. The same is true here. The grant in our case indicated lands are hereby granted to the state of Wisconsin subject to the disposal of the legislature thereof for the purposes aforesaid, and the purposes immediately described above are for the construction of a railroad, that is the establishment of a railroad corridor. And finally, the Townsend court indicated that there should be an indication of Congress's underlying reasons and the consideration for why this public land is being given away to a private owner. There, the Townsend court said, the substantial consideration inducing the grant was, quote, perpetual use of the land for the legitimate purpose of the railroad. Now let's look at the grant that's involved in our case. Was there a similar intent displayed by Congress that they were giving this land away in order to have permanently some form of public highway? The language in the grant says that said railroads shall be and remain public highways, for the use of the government of the United States. There could hardly be a more clear expression of the intent of the Congress that there will be a public interest retained in these lands. So I submit to you that the grant that's involved in this case matches the language and the rationale in the Townsend case, fits it to a T, and it's not necessary to have some magic words right of way, because we can see that the analysis used by the Townsend court did not rely on such specific language. The second point that I said that I would address is, what about public policy? Does it support the Mahler's narrow reading of the Townsend case, or does it support Bayfield County's broader reading? I think we have to consider this, that the lands that we are talking about here began as public lands, publicly owned lands held by the United States, and that the government gave them away to private companies to advance a specific purpose. They did not give these lands away without strings being attached. They were given away to advance the specific public purpose of economic development through the creation of a public highway in the form of a railroad corridor. Now, can anyone imagine that the Congress intended to give these lands away for the creation of this railroad corridor, for the railroad to build the corridor, build the railroad, and then conceivably as early as 1900 just deed it away for some other purpose, and the United States is left without the benefits that it expected to have? I think that's not reasonable. I think the language in the Act indicates Congress's clear intent that these lands, that the railroad corridor established, was going to be retained for use as a public highway. So under the approach advocated by Bayfield County, the public does end up retaining an interest in these once public lands, and can preserve the use of the railroad corridor as a public highway, in this instance, use as a public recreational trail. Under the Mahler's approach and analysis, the public interest in the use of the lands would be lost altogether. And I submit that the Mahlers, in effect, would gain a windfall. They bought their property after the snowmobile trail had already been established. They bought their property subject to easements, restrictions, etc., of record, which included at that time the rail corridor that had been converted to a snowmobile trail. So my conclusion would be that two things. Bayfield County's construction of Townsend matches the language and the rationale of the Townsend Court completely. And further, that Bayfield County's proposed construction of that case is the better public policy here. The strip of land that is at issue here was public land that was given away for the creation of a railroad that in the language of the Congress, in the language of the act we are dealing with here, shall be and remain a public highway. And that is the result under Bayfield County's approach. I ask that you affirm.
If it pleases the court, my name is Charles Montang. I'm here for Amicus Rails to Trails Conservancy. In the very brief time I have, I'm going to have to focus on one tree and not really the forest. And I'd like to focus on what Mr. Mahler's counsel indicated was his primary argument, that because there was no specific railroad right-of-way grant, the case has to be, decision of Judge Crabb below has to be reversed. We very vehemently disagree with that. We agree with Bayfield County and Judge Crabb that the language of Section 912 and 913 is written in a broad enough fashion to apply to exactly this kind of situation. It is triggered whenever any railroad structure is found on federally granted land, and wherever we find land that is used as a federal right-of-way pursuant to the statutory scheme such as is before the court. However, in order to fully inform the court, as good amicus should, I wanted to discuss very briefly the background of these federally granted railroad rights-of-way. It turns out that Congress did adopt very early on a General Railroad Act. It's the Act of August 4, 1852. It's been seldom referenced in the literature. In fact, I haven't found a case citing it. In 1856, Congress adopted a grant and aid statute that wrapped around the 1852 Act, making it essentially equivalent to the old Illinois Central grant of 1850, which has always been held to have all these federal right-of-way laws apply to it, 912, 913, and so on, by the state courts in Illinois. I think by federal courts that have considered the issue. Mr. Mahler, his counsel, asserts that the 1852 Act lapsed or terminated. Well, it did ultimately lapse, but let me discuss that for a moment. First of all, it was extended. The Act of July 15, 1862 extended the 1852 Act all the way through the period when two other events in this case happened. First, there was an 1864 extension of the 1856 right-of-way, Federal Grant and Aid Act. Then in June 21, 1866, Congress adopted a specific route to Bayfield County, approving a specific route here. Ultimately, it's true, the 1852 Act lapsed, but it didn't really lapse. What happened was Congress adopted an alternative right-of-way statute. That's the 1875 Act, 43 U.S.C. 934 to 39. The primary difference for our purposes here between the 1875 Act and the 1852 Act is there's no requirement for any specific date of the railroad charter in the 1875 Act, which, if you'll remember from the oral argument of Mr. Mahler's counsel, was a point he relied on. He said there's no chartering of the railroad as required by the 1852 Act. Well, by 1875, Congress got rid of that requirement. Now, the property was still held in trust. It's federal grant and aid property still held in trust by the state of Wisconsin for railroad purposes at the time of the adoption of the 1875 Act. You essentially have exactly the same situation as with the Illinois Central Land Grant. And the deed to the railroad wasn't until 1884. And from our point of view, however you look at what happened here, it seems to us to fit the statutory scheme. Now, one other point, which I view as a kind of invitation to error, counsel for Mr. Mahler in his reply and at oral argument invites this court to assume that there was assume or even find that there was no map of definite location for this property. In other words, he contends that there was no compliance with either 1852 Act or 1875 Act. This was neither asserted nor admitted below. This was up on summary judgment as we read the record. Neither party asserted or assumed that. And from our own research, Rails to Trails Conservancy is convinced that if this point were to be examined, one would find the filing of the profile map, map of definite location, prior to the deed out to the railroad, much less the deed out to the Maulers. Thank you, Your Honor. That's all the time I have. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Your Honor. Briefly, to respond to Mr. Narding's argument here about the public purpose, we do have a public purpose with the grant of lands in aid of railroad construction, which is different from the grant of lands for specific right-of-way purposes. The grant of lands in aid of railroad construction was to grant a subsidy. These lands were given away to the railroads, or the states, then the railroads, sometimes directly to the railroads, for purpose of subsidizing the construction of the railroad. The railroads were intended to take the land and turn around and sell them to settlers in order to bring people in close and actually drive up the price of land to the United States. The benefit to the public here was the fact the United States would get more money for lands closer to the railroads that were being constructed, for the lands that were still a part of the public domain that they were trying to dispose of. But the bottom line here is that the lands were intended to be granted in fee simple, absolute, not fee simple with a limited right of revert, or this limited fee simple idea which is discussed in the Townsend case. The Townsend case should be limited, and it has been limited by the United States Supreme Court, to that specific land grant, the Northern Pacific land grant, and to other like specific land grants where there has been an explicit grant of right-of-way. That's what the Noble case held, and that's what the Great Northern case held, which was the subsequent 1942 case, which even restricted it further, saying that the 1875 General Right-of-Way Act, which I mistakenly referred to as 1876, I'm talking about the same one as Mr. Montaigne here, the 1875 General Right-of-Way Act was only intended to grant a right of passage over the public domain. And I don't think we have that here. I think we have that was not even held to, there's nothing in the record, and I think nobody's asserting that. That's not in the record here. I don't think we're talking about asking for summary judgment to send back that back to relitigate that issue or to have that issue litigated, because in any ways, in the final analysis, it doesn't make any difference. The case in the Great Northern case held that that's still only a right of passage, which upon abandonment would still revert to the abutting landowners or the grantor, in this case, the predecessors in interest to the Maulers, who are also happen to be the abutting landowners. I would ask this court to reverse and to remand this case so that we can have the disposition of, have the determination on the takings and the amount of damages that my clients are owed. Thank you very much.